Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. What do we have for you tonight? Well, we have Sports Beat up until 7 o'clock. Then it's 7 o'clock. It's the Mike Bray Radio Show, live from O'Rourke's at Eddy Street Commons. And the scheduled player guest is Martinus Gebben, the man in the middle for the Fighting Irish. Mike Bray Radio Show from 7 to 8 here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So we've got 2 hours to do whatever the heck we want before Mike Bray takes over these airwaves. Eric and I will be with you for the first hour. We'll allow Mike Bray to talk a little bit about DJ Harvey and Bonzi Colson, an injury update from the head coach of the Fighting Irish basketball team. Then we'll talk about the Notre Dame football defensive line. Are the starters set up front? When I look at the IndyInsider.com depth chart, which of course is very official, looks like the starters might be set. I'll ask our Fighting Irish football insider, Eric Hansen, that question in just a couple of moments, and we'll play back the conversation Eric and I had recently with defensive line coach and now associate head coach of the Fighting Irish, Mike Elston. We have our IndyInsider.com recruiting update at the bottom of this hour. Mr. Tyler James, who covers all things recruiting for the South Bend Tribune, will join us. And he's going to talk more about the class of 2018. And he's going to answer the question, which coach was Notre Dame's best recruiter of the 2018 class? Who might it be? We'll find out coming up very, very soon. My five questions of the day, I'm throwing a baseball bone to Mr. Hansen. You always have to talk football in these, so you're a huge baseball fan, so I gave you a baseball topic today. You good with that?
Okay.
You don't sound enthused. Well, today's question, the top five storylines that intrigue you about the NL Central. Can you handle that chore?
I can.
Is every answer going to be one word today or two words?
It is not.
Okay, there you go. It is not. Wow, you went to three there. All right, coming up next hour when Sean joins me, more commentary from Irish head coach Mike Bray today as the Irish get set to take on Boston College Saturday at 4 on WSBT Radio. More on DJ Harvey. It looks like he's ready to go for BC. And Mike will answer the question, is it a must-win against the Eagles? Answers coming up next hour. Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs, will be by for his weekly visit previewing the Chicago Cubs minor league system. Today we're looking at the catcher and first base positions. And we're going to hear from the director of athletics at Mishawaka High School. Dean Huppert's going to talk about the vacancy right now with the head football coach at Mishawaka, with Bart Curtis moving along to Warsaw. And Sean Stiers caught up with Dean last night before the Mishawaka basketball team beat Wawasee 41-31. So what is Mr. Huppert looking for? You will find out at the end of the 6 o'clock hour, right before the Mike Bray Radio Show here on WSBT. Well, Mike Bray has more than three words for you, as he gave us a state of the state on where his basketball team stands injury-wise leading into that matchup with Boston College in Chestnut Hill on Saturday. Here was Mike Bray just about 2 hours ago.
Got DJ Harvey back in practice today and tomorrow. And, you know, we're trending the right way. I think there's a good chance we can get him back on the floor and help our depth on Saturday. You know, Bonzi's walking in a shoe now, out of the boot after the x-ray yesterday. And, you know, he can shoot a little bit, maybe some light jogging next week. So that's kind of the state of the union with those guys.
Okay, so it looks like, barring a setback today or tomorrow, freshman DJ Harvey returns to the Irish active corps. He has not played since injuring his knee January 16th at home against Louisville. It was a bone bruise to the left knee. But it looks like DJ will be ready to go against Boston College. And Bonzi Colson, we watched him shoot after Mike Bray's media session, and they were in the pit. He came right down the stairs rather bristly and took jump shots. He can't really obviously run yet, but he's just taking jump shots and looked very, very good. So some positives for this Irish basketball team as they get Harvey back and Colson is trending in the right direction. More on Harvey and Colson coming up next hour. We'll play the entire conversation that Mike had with Harvey and Colson possibly coming back. Of course, Harvey a little sooner than Bonzi.
Okay, and you might have said it, but what do we have a new timetable on Bonzi?
Well, he's got that x-ray coming up on Monday, and then that could set the table for a lot of things happening.
Okay.
So, it's looking good.
Okay,
looking
so good. Monday is the day we ought to be reading Tom Noy and listening to you and reading tea leaves.
Here, I'll replay the audio.
Okay.
We'll just let Mike say it.
Okay.
Got DJ Harvey back in practice today and tomorrow, and, you know, we're trending the right way. I think there's a good chance we can get him back on the floor and help our depth on Saturday. You know, Bonzi's walking in a shoe now out of the boot after the x-ray yesterday. And, you know, he can shoot a little bit, maybe some light jogging next week. So that's kind of the state of the union with those guys.
And I know I heard he was going to have that x-ray next week, too. So there you go.
Okay.
You're up to date.
All right.
And now you'll be able to read Tom Noy's article in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com, an informed basketball fan.
Okay.
You're ready to go. More basketball talk coming up very, very soon. Right now we will shift to a little football conversation and the Irish defensive line. I kind of teased this at our opening statement, but are the starters set along the defensive line? This is going to lead into you having the chance to hear from defensive line coach Mike Elston, the interview that Eric and I did last week with Mike. But you take a look at IndyInsider.com. You've got Dalen Hayes and Jay Hayes as the starting defensive ends. The nose guard is Jonathan Bonner. The defensive tackle is Jerry Tillery. Those two are flip-flopping because Mike told us that during a media session last Wednesday. So is the starting lineup set, in your opinion, Mr. Hansen, or could something change over the next few months?
I think the only thing that, you know, I think had Bonner stayed at defensive tackle, I think Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa would have been pushing hard. In this configuration, I think there's a gap between Bonner and Heinisch and Darnell Yule and Jamion Franklin. I think he's clearly the number one guy there. The one position where I think there might be some wiggle room is the strong side defensive end, where Khalid Kareem is really hard charging and making some big plays. And Jay Hayes had a nice year last year. They both improved a lot. But Khalid may be a guy that just overtakes him. And it would still be a timeshare, but he is making leaps and bounds improvement. That would be the guy I would keep my eye on.
I would like to hear a little bit about my guy, Julian Okorah, and where you think he fits in.
I think Julian remains a package player. I think eventually he's going to be an every down player. And if and when he does, I'm not sure how that fits if Khalid Kareem moves inside. But I think Julian, you know, he's a junior. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how good of friends he and Matt Bayless become this winter. But I think Dalen Hayes is still the guy there. And then when you have third down, then you put two weak side ends on the field and have them bookend. And I think that's Julian's. I wouldn't count him out either. I just can't see him leaping over Dalen Hayes. That's where it's kind of a head scratcher. But the thing is, Mike Elko's philosophy was this way, and certainly Clark Lee's is going to be too. We talked about this at the beginning of last year. They want to play at least too deep at just about every position. And this would allow you to, you know, you don't have to have Dalen Hayes in, you know, 80 plays or 85 plays or 75 plays. Julian Okwara can take some of those snaps even when he's not in a package. Mm-hmm. So having too deep at those positions, I think, is a really good thing.
Eric, last year at this time, we were scratching our heads. Where is the depth going to come from along the defensive line? And guys like Heinisch filled the void, and that did not turn out to be as much of a headache as we thought it was going to be at the start of the year. Now we move to today. How much more depth do you see across the front four compared to last year at this time?
Well, I think at weak side defensive end, you're now three deep because Kofi Wardlow's going to play a little bit this year.
Redshirted last year.
Defensive tackle, I think you're at least three deep. If Mike Adu, this is going to be Mike Adu Treadway's kind of make or break year for him. He's third on the depth chart right now. If he's not ready, Jason Adamolola is going to jump him, and that'll be the kind of the end of Mike Adu. And then at nose guard, I think that's where your depth is maybe exciting and scary all at the same time, because after Bonner, then you go to Kurt Heinisch, and Kurt was really good when he could play 15 plays in a game. He could give you a lot. Not sure that he's ready for more than that. Darnell Yule is really the dark horse here because he's, you know, maybe the strongest guy of all the people we've mentioned, and this is an important spring for Darnell. He's either gonna get back on track to where we thought he was, or he's probably gonna be a guy that's, you know, doesn't play a lot, because Jamion Franklin, I think, again, is another guy that's going to be pushing from the freshman class for some playing time, and I think is an extremely talented and extremely mentally tough kid.
National Signing Day was 8 days ago. We had the chance to talk to the assistant coaches and the coordinators. We're going to play back Eric and I's conversation with associate head coach and defensive line coach Mike Elston. What a job he did last year with the Fighting Irish defensive line, and here's what he had to say.
Coach Elston, the Adamolola twins, kind of a unique situation, recruiting two people in the same household. Is that unique, and what do you see from them on tape?
Well, it is unique for us to have twins coming here at Notre Dame, but I just see, you know, young guys that are explosive, that have been well trained with their hands and ability to play the game of football at the defensive line position. They love to play, very successful, you know, passionate about it. So it's exciting that they're going to be coming here, and you know, I wish they were here right now, but I got to wait till June to get them.
What do you think about the potential for Jason to play early? What would he have to do to get in that mix?
I think for both of them, you know, we don't go into, you know, a fall camp or even a summer conditioning thinking that we're going to redshirt anybody, so especially up front, you know, because injuries happen so quickly. But I think both of them, if they come in and they can learn the defense, learn the communication, and show that they can physically hold up, you know, with the rigors of college football, which I believe they both can, and even Jamion for that fact, you know, then I believe that they can come in and give us some much-needed snaps and depth, and if need be, you know, a bigger role if, you know, knock on wood, if anything were to happen.
Is Jamion a better fit for the nose guard and Jason for the defensive tackle? Is that how you're looking at those two?
Yeah, that's how we have it slotted. You know, Jamion being a nose guard and Jason being a D-tackle, three technique.
This was the first time you've had kind of a two-stage recruiting cycle. What did you learn from this, and what do you feel like Notre Dame did well in using the new rules?
Yeah, well, what I enjoyed about it was the fact that you get 21 guys committed and signed in December, and then over the holidays you can actually take a little bit of a breath and not worry about a guy calling you on Christmas Eve saying, "Hey, Coach, I'm changing my mind." You know, and then you move forward with the positives, where you move forward with the needs that you have and address them, because, you know, end of the season happens and excuse me, you got attrition in certain areas that you didn't know you were going to have. And I had an emergency on deck with Tillery possibly leaving, you know, Bonner, you know, hanging it up, and there was even conversation with Jay Hayes at times, you know, so the D tackle position for me was scary, but you know, we're able to recruit those guys back, and And so it's going to be what was potentially a poor position for us, you know, or a young position for us, now is going to be the strength of our defensive unit. So, you know, but anyway, the needs, you can move forward with your needs in January, which is nice.
Mike, as you think about last year's group of Yule and also Wardlow going through the redshirt, what were they able to accomplish last year?
Yeah, you know, they learned a lot of football. It was fun. Darnell was in a unique situation where he came from a school and didn't get a lot of training, you know, on how to play the game of football, defensive line, and a little bit of a mauler and attacker, and which is good. You want to have that, but he's got to learn how to fundamentally play the game, and he's learning that. So he got a lot of great reps with that last year. And then Kofi's going to be a darn good football player, and he's putting on weight. He's stronger. He's going to add a lot of good things for us this spring.
I just follow up on Darnell. I mean, do you think he would be in a position to help you this year? Is he sanded out the rough edges enough that he could do that?
How about if I answer that at the end of spring? Okay. I'm encouraged by his growth, but. You know, we gotta wait to see how far his growth is actually for the spring practices.
You mentioned Tillery coming back and Bonner and so forth. What did you sell Tillery on coming back? What was the selling point? Why do you think he made the decision to come back?
Well, I think there was a consistent message from, you know, everybody that was in his ear here at Notre Dame, and he, you know, Jerry and I, and we've built a great relationship. He knows he can trust me. He knows I have his best interest in mind, and if he was truly a first round draft pick at this point, or a second round draft pick, and he was going to have secured money, then hell, I would have helped him pack his bags, you know. But at the end of the day, he's not yet. He's got three or four things to work on. We identified those things that him and I met on. And I hear the same message from Coach Kelly. Coach Kelly did some great research with the NFL executives and GMs, and gave Jerry just some concrete, solid numbers, and he listened, you know. And his parents were on board, and his parents knew what was best for him. And sometimes when they have someone else in their ear that says something different than what we're saying, then that becomes the issue. But everybody was on the same page, and it worked out well.
You got different rules coming up this year that hadn't been implemented yet. The earlier official visits, what impact do you think that'll have for Notre Dame specifically, if that's an advantage? And then also, because you have these early official visits, is Irish Invasion still going to be such a centerpiece with what you do with recruiting?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of layers to that question. I think, you know, most likely the Irish Invasion disappears. I think that what you end up having is, and that's a good question for Coach Polian, you know, the recruiting coordinator. But the, you know, you got to be selective with your spring visits. It's going to be crucial to make sure that you're picking the right guys to come, because if a guy's going to wait until January and February to make his decision, a visit in April is not going to do well for you. And now if he's an early enrollee, or if he's a, hey, coach, I'm going to make my decision in the summer, and you feel good that he'll stick by making that decision, then maybe you potentially bring him in the spring. But, you know, we're doing such a great job, at least at my position, D-line, to get guys here on campus unofficially, that, you know, we should have a really good idea of who we're going to official an unofficial visit here this summer.
Last thing from me, with the change, with Mike Elko leaving to go to Texas A&M, when you and Clark sit down with the rest of the staff, how similar is the scheme going to be? Did you want to tweak it a little bit, or do you feel like this is pretty much what Mike Elko was running?
No, you know, I think, again, another great question for Coach Lee, but from my perspective, you know, it's going to have a similarity to what we were doing a year ago. Obviously, we're going to quality control and watch every clip from last season and make the tweaks, make the changes, goods and bad, and obviously Clark will add his flair to it, and things that he's feels strongly about, I'll give my input when needed and when asked, and you know, we'll be able to improve the defense and move forward, and it'll be very similar in structure, but you know, there'll be some uniqueness to it too.
One quick follow I thought of, Kurt Heinisch, what kind of a dancer is he? I know he went to the dad-daughter dance.
You know, it's from what I understand, my kids told me that he outdanced me from the last time, but he sweat a heck of a lot more than I did. So my kids, my kids, they didn't get as wet with the sweat when I was dancing with them.
Mike, thanks for the visit. We'll see you this spring.
Thank you.
Was that the answer you were looking for? The sweat report?
It was not what I was looking for, but it was a darn good answer.
All right. That is Mike Elston, associate head coach, Fighting Irish defensive line coach. And again, as we look ahead to this season, Bonner and Tillery flip positions. Tillery moves to defensive tackle, Bonner to the nose guard. Tillery maybe freed up a little bit to get after the quarterback after doing a pretty good job doing that from the nose guard spot in 2017. You heard Mike say during that interview, more than likely, Irish Invasion goes away due to the early enrollment and kids coming to campus earlier. We'll talk to Tyler James about that during our IndyInsider.com recruiting update, which is coming up next on your home of the Fighting Irish and tonight's Mike Bray radio show at 7 o'clock, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Since we went to the soap theme, have you ever went back and watched old soap shows?
I haven't, but I wouldn't mind doing that if I knew how to do it. I'm sure Tyler could tell me how to do it.
We'll get you hooked up. Technology's a beautiful thing. We've got Tyler James on the line, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. We're going to talk all things Notre Dame football recruiting here on this Thursday evening. Mr. James, how are you?
I'm doing well, trying to stay dry with all this rain in the area.
The snow is going away. It's a beautiful thing. I can see Eloy Jimenez just hitting bombs in spring training right now. About that time.
You love it. You love it.
Oh, that's right. Hey, we just played our conversation with Mike Elston before you came on the air, and we were talking a lot of things about recruiting with Mike, the former recruiting coordinator for the Fighting Irish, of course, now associate head coach and defensive line coach. And Eric was talking about the early signing period and how Notre Dame handled it. And one thing that Mike mentioned was with the early signing period process and with kids coming to campus earlier, he said that more than likely, the Irish Invasion goes away. Tyler, you've covered that event. Is this a big loss, or does the whole early signing process kind of cover what they lose with that event?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would be probably an interest. I mean, I think it would be a loss. I think they would have to do something in some sort of way to replace it. Maybe they would change the format or make some tweaks to it. I think it's just a good anytime you can build up an event and get an event that matters to get kids on campus, I think those are important. Certainly maybe the timeline affects how Notre Dame feels about that. Maybe not wanting to wait until middle of June to make something like that happen. So maybe they change the way they handle that. But I think the camp aspect part of it is a pretty small part of it in terms of the value to them. I think they are able to evaluate some guys who end up offering kids. Obviously, Paul Mawala was one that benefited from that. He received an offer after competing at the Irish Invasion this past summer. So they do learn some more about guys, but I do think just the fact that they can get so many guys on campus, I think it sort of has started to trend maybe to the junior classes more than the senior classes. So I think if they were to phase it out, they would need to replace it with something and find some sort of event to get to continue to get guys on campus throughout the summer and to get them more familiar with Notre Dame.
Tyler, I've got my own opinion on this. I'll throw it at you first. How do you feel like this is Brian Kelly's ninth recruiting class? How would you feel like this recruiting class overall stacks up against the other eight?
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of thinking about this, and I don't know that I feel extremely strongly on where that ranks. I think it's somewhere in the second tier right now, and I say that right now because I feel like I may change my mind as I do some more thinking and research about this. I'm planning to write a story about it. But I have them fourth in Brian Kelly's tenure. To me, the number one class is the 2013 class. It's in a class of its own. I think it's in its own sort of tier. They were number three in the country with four five-star recruits. And I think for this exercise, you have to include Eddie Vanderdoes in the class because he was a signed recruit. We can't necessarily anticipate the guys that are in the current 2018 class all making it to campus, so it's not necessarily fair to eliminate Ezzie Vanderdoes from the class. So then after that, I think the 2018 class, I think it's pretty close when it comes to the 2016 class, who I have second. There was one 5-star recruit and 12 4-star recruits according to Rivals in that class. And then the 2015 class, I have third, and they had 13 4-star recruits according to Rivals. And I think I sort of lean towards when Notre Dame addressed areas of need and problem areas for recruiting. Like the 2016 class, they did a good job on the defensive line with getting Dalen Hayes, Khalid Kareem, and Julian Aquara, and got some great defensive backs in that class as well. And then I think with the 2018 class, I have them fourth. I think they did a good job at certain positions like defensive back, wide receiver, linebackers. But there's not necessarily a hole at really any position in this 2018 class. They did a good job from top to bottom addressing needs throughout, but maybe don't have as many top-notch groups as maybe the 2016 and the 2015 class. So I have them fourth currently. Where do you have them stacking up?
I would have them third or fourth. I think that I agree with you about the 2013 class. That was one was easy to make the number one class.
Right.
There was so much star power there. The three recruits that would have changed my mind about this and would have really had me challenging at least for the number two spot, if not pushing, knocking on the door for number one, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, and Solomon Taliapupu. If they had gotten those three really difference-maker-type players to add into this class, I feel a little bit different about it. As it is, I think they got depth. I think they address needs. I think they got some really good players, and probably guys like Shane Simon and Derek Allen are going to be better than, and I think Phil Jurkovic, too, are going to be better than maybe their rankings suggest. I would have also liked to see a top-of-the-line running back. You know, they've been pretty fortunate in that Josh Adams, a 3-star, turned out to be as good as he was. And, Tony Jones Jr.'s, better than, I think, his star ranking and so forth. But
sure.
In this class, you kind of thought, as good as the running game's been, it would seem like it would have been easy to cherry-pick a guy that was at least a high 4-star player at a running back.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead, Darren.
No, go right ahead, Tyler. Finish up.
I think maybe we look at it a little bit different if Marquise Stepp stays in the class because he was a 4-star recruit, even though he had some trouble staying on the field in his high school career with some injuries. But I do think that maybe was part of what kind of hamstrung them. Not to make a pun because hamstring issues were Marquise Stepp's injury issues, but they certainly were in a tougher spot there because they weren't able to kind of close with the running backs that they thought they were going to be able to early in the process.
I think one other position, had they added another recruit there that was kind of a wow recruit, defensive end, that also would have been kind of the one spot that I would have looked at, that the 2011 class was able to get, Tua and Lynch and Ishak, even though only Tua ended up being the guy that contributed to a national championship run. It was still, at the time, a big deal to get all three of those guys.
Tyler James talking Fighting Irish football recruiting on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. So the class of 2018 had 27 members, Tyler. Is there any way of knowing how many offers Notre Dame extended during this process and how many kids actually spent time on the Notre Dame campus? Because you see the number 27, but I can only imagine the actual numbers of people that Notre Dame was interested in.
Well, it's hard to get an exact number because an offer is sort of a KG deal. An offer isn't necessarily something that's written in stone, and certainly not all offers are committable, and some kids may misunderstand, think they have an offer, they don't have an offer, or vice versa. But from my count, I counted 181 unofficial offers that were reported by recruits. And that's not an astronomical number. There's plenty of schools that pass 200 in total. But and then of those 181 guys, I counted 81 of them actually visited campus. So that's a pretty significant amount of visitors when you talk about unofficial visitors and official visitors that made their way on Notre Dame's campus. So and you can kind of separate themselves. The guys that are visiting are usually the guys that Notre Dame is the most serious about, and those guys are obviously most interested in. So to get 81 guys on campus that Notre Dame really likes, and those kids are really considering Notre Dame, is pretty impressive to get that many guys on campus, and then obviously ending up signing 27 of those guys.
And did you say how many of those were official visits?
There were 44 official visits by my count, and so like we said, 27 of those, all 27 who signed made official visits, so that's a 61% return rate on official visits. But if you take out the guys that visited officially once before or after they were already committed, so there were plenty of those guys that were committed to Notre Dame, then took official visits just because it's kind of part of the process. The Irish landed 12 of the 29 guys that they hosted for official visits that weren't yet committed. So that's 41% in terms of their hit rate when it comes to official visits.
Tyler, do you realize when Eric Hansen was thinking about making the move from Hammond Times to South Bend, you know how many times he visited the South Bend Tribune before making the decision?
Nine times.
That is untrue.
All right, so here's an interesting question for you, Tyler. The 2018 class is in the books. If you had to hand out a best recruiter award from the Notre Dame staff, who do you go with?
I'm going to have to go with Ty Lytton. I think he might have sealed it up in the last few days. I think being able to land Noah Boykin at the end was certainly a big deal for Notre Dame. DJ Brown, it was only a 3-star recruit, but I think he's a talented guy. Certainly was probably an easy recruitment for Notre Dame in terms of fit and his want to be here, considering how things played out, where they kind of told him to wait, and then once they were able to kind of push for him, he still kind of followed through with committing to Notre Dame and making a visit. To get guys like Houston Griffith and Derek Allen in the class, certainly he had some help there with Mike Elko, who was no longer at Notre Dame. But I think Todd Light certainly pulled his weight together and rebounded from a tough 2017 class. I think before Todd Light, it may have gone to Mike Elston, and I think we kind of forget all the work Elston did because a lot of his work was done so early. He was responsible for Ovi Ogofu and Bo Bauer, who were committed when he was before they were even seniors, and Jason Adamalola and Justin Adamalola, he recruited those guys and got them on campus for a camp and offered them, and they committed shortly after that, and helped out with Shane Simon out of New Jersey, and certainly having the Adamalola twins in the class helped out with that. So I think Todd Light is the narrow winner there with the way he was able to close at the end of the class.
Wow. I got a kind of a weird follow-up question when you brought up Boykin, and Mike wrote about this a little bit about out-of-profile recruits. And again, these are intelligent kids, and they are kids that have had some success at Notre Dame and other places. And yet, we talk about fit, and in some places, it's not a comfortable fit just because of the structure of the high school and sometimes demographics and everything else, and you come to Notre Dame and there's some culture shock. I wonder if you feel like you can kind of, if it's really an individual case-by-case basis, do you think this whole issue's overstated? I'm curious what your take on the out-of-profile recruit is.
I think it's a fair way to kind of evaluate things and look at things and sort of, Notre Dame's and sort of weigh the risks with the rewards and figuring out if a kid is a fit here. I think when I think of a guy like Noah, and I certainly don't know Noah very well, I won't pretend to know that. There are plenty of these guys at Simon Notre Dame that I know much better than Noah. I think that maybe the fact that they have some other guys from D.C. in the class and with D.J. Brown and then obviously Kofi Wardlow in the previous class, I think maybe that can help the transition. I think certainly you talk about certainly a guy like Lawrence Keith coming from New Orleans. It's not a place that Notre Dame regularly recruits. And obviously Michael Young is on the team, so he has some familiarity there. And someone that can maybe help him through that. I think that is a big deal. And certainly, obviously, the academics and there's a lot of stuff that Notre Dame has to kind of determine from getting to know the player and the family around them. I think family has a lot to do with it as well in terms of knowing who's guiding the kid, not only throughout the recruiting process, but will be certainly keeping in touch with him as he goes through college. But I think that's something that Notre Dame has to continue to evaluate, and certainly I think up front you kind of need to get to know the kids better early on in the recruiting process so you're not necessarily getting towards the end, not knowing if a kid is going to fit at Notre Dame. I think they felt comfortable with Noah Boykin, and it was just up to Noah deciding if he felt comfortable at Notre Dame.
Tyler, my final question. Earlier this week, we found out that the NCAA denied Notre Dame's appeal, and the Irish lost those 21 victories from the 12 and 13 campaigns. You had the Frozen Five involved in the academic fraud, and you got a guy like Iler Hardy that got back into the good graces at Notre Dame, ended up getting his degree. He played football and ended up being a positive story for him. When kids that are deciding on a college over the next couple of years, do you think that particular situation has a positive or a negative in the recruiting process? I would think it's a positive because it shows Notre Dame is willing to give kids a second chance.
Yeah, I think it is more positive than negative, especially, I mean, it would be, the only way it could be negative in my mind is if there were some sanctions that affected Notre Dame moving forward, and that's not the case. I don't know that it looks like to kids that, okay, there's some systemic issue going on with Notre Dame with kids cheating, and is it too hard at Notre Dame to get by without cheating? I think Notre Dame can easily point to the academic staff they have on hand to help you get through Notre Dame, and they're certainly upfront with kids of telling them what the demands of Notre Dame will be. So I think it's more positive than negative. I think, like you said, there's certainly the honesty that comes with it. Notre Dame was pretty upfront with what happened here and kind of addressed it. And the NCAA has made the ruling on what the penalty should be. So I think that Notre Dame shouldn't necessarily have to worry about this coming up too much. Although I do think there will be other schools that use this as another example, and probably have been using this as an example of Notre Dame is a hard school. Are you going to be able to handle what Notre Dame is throwing at you? But obviously Notre Dame will spin that positively because they're upfront about that, and they want kids to know that this is a place that will challenge you.
Last one from me, Tyler. What's the next kind of organized gathering of 2019 recruits that's going to be on campus?
Yeah, Notre Dame is working to put together another junior day for the weekend of March 3rd. So not necessarily another big event here in February. Notre Dame already had a pretty big event in January. We did a good job getting a lot of guys on campus, and that resulted in KJ Wallace committing to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame feeling pretty good about where they're at with a number of other recruits. So this would be another important part of kind of the recruiting calendar for Notre Dame, and maybe a chance for them to grow the 2019 class that already has three commitments.
Tyler, what stories are you working on for the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, I'm working on a story kind of ranking the classes, working on trying to finalize my opinion on that, but doing that, and then I'm also working on sort of a series of numbers of kind of what we were talking about earlier, who visited, kind of maybe looking at how long kids waited to commit after they visited, and kind of just a deep dive into the certain data that comes with the 2018 recruiting cycle.
Tyler, great job as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
For the latest in finding Irish football recruiting, Tyler James has everything you need at IndyInsider.com and in the South Bend Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at TJamesNDI. That's TJamesNDI. Well, E. Hansen NDI is going to take care of the My 5 question of the day that centers around baseball storylines and the grand old National League Central. That's next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
We're talking baseball in today's My 5 question of the day. The Notre Dame baseball team opens up at LSU tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. But today we go with professional baseball, and Eric will answer this My 5 question of the day. The top five storylines that has intrigued him about the National League Central. Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, Pirates, Reds. We go with number five.
Well, I'm going to go with, who is Kyle Schwarber, and where does he hit in the order? You know, he was such a fast-rising player through the Cubs organization. Then we had last year's season after the triumphant return from injury. And I'm just curious who the real Kyle Schwarber is. Who do you think it is?
He's a 30-home run hitter who's going to strike out a lot, who's going to play below-average defense, and probably get on base enough with walks. But I'm not convinced he can hit for a high average. He hasn't showed it yet.
Where do you hit him in the order?
I mean, we had this conversation all last year. I just don't put him in the leadoff spot.
Yeah.
I maybe put him down in the seven spot.
I like him at around 5 or 6.
Okay.
Okay, number four. Did the Cardinals do enough? Darren's shaking his head.
Well, I was asked something similar at SouthBendCubs.com talking about the Cubs changes during the offseason, and we were asked about teams improving, trying to catch the Cubs in the NL Central. I go, oh, there are teams actually trying to do that? Cardinals doing a great job contending for the wild card.
All right. A lot of time, number three is, a lot of times teams, I'm counting down my own top five, aren't I? A lot of times teams win the offseason and you're all excited about it, and I think Milwaukee's the team. Is reality going to match their offseason?
They might take a step back this year. They need Arrieta. If any team needs Arrieta, it's Milwaukee. Number two.
Number two, I think the Cubs made some pretty good moves, and they've gone all in on this window.
Good for them.
Do they have the organizational depth in case there's some injuries, some unexpected injuries? Do they have the players to trade to get another veteran player? Do they have the minor leaguers to come up and help them?
Doubtful.
Okay.
Doubtful. And your favorite storyline about the NL Central.
Well, because of the slow free agent market and kind of the slow trade market, my number one is, will someone in the NL Central add an elite starting pitcher? Because I think that could change the balance of power very quickly if somebody added, let's say, an Archer from Tampa Bay in a trade, or I don't know that there's a free agent. Maybe Arrieta if you get the vintage Arrieta. But I think somebody could add a starting pitcher and really change things.
Well, the Brewers and the Cardinals have some good young pitching. The Cardinals have a little better young pitching than Milwaukee, but the Brewers have a couple of guys that are intriguing. There's an Ortiz they're very excited about. And, of course, the Cardinals in May are going to get Alex Reyes back. That's right. A huge addition to their bullpen and eventually their rotation. I think Jack Flaherty is going to blossom this year. He can be a starter for this team. And then there's a young man by the name of Jordan Hicks that's throwing 97 as a starter. Dakota Hudson could be a bullpen guy or a starter. So they've got all these young guns that the Cubs don't have in their minor league system ready to come up. That's why they are not going to go spend 6 for 125 on a Yu Darvish.
Here's what couple things concern me about the Cardinals. What if Wainwright is bad? You know, is Matheny going to pull the plug on him in the rotation and give him a different role? Do you just kind of let roll him out there because he's Adam Wainwright? The other thing is that I don't even know how to pronounce it. Is it Michaelis that they got?
Michaelis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't... I'm not seeing that working.
He's from Japan. He pitched a couple of years after being with the Rangers. Went to Japan, had great success.
Well, I...
That's their Yu Darvish signing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I need to be convinced of that.
He eats lizards. Does that excite you?
If it helps him pitch better.
Well, he ate a live lizard once in spring training with the Rangers.
Again, if it lowers his ERA by a point, then I think that's awesome.
That's the My Five question of the day. It is 5:56 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Eric, what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune?
Well, Tom has a feature on Penn's Tia Chambers. He also has his Hoops Chat transcript. Indy women are at Virginia, big game in the ACC, lots of Winter Olympics, and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow, top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malkus again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, 3 is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, 3 for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
6:06 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM WSBT. Mike Bray Radio Show coming up at 7 o'clock. The scheduled player guest is the man in the middle, Martinus Gebin, the senior from Lithuania. Mike Berry Radio Show at 7 o'clock. Irish basketball at Boston College Saturday at 4 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. He's Sean. I'm Darren. Great to have you with us on this Thursday night. Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs. We'll talk Cubs minor league prospects at 6:30. We focus on catcher and first base tonight. We combine those two because catchers play a lot of first base in the minor leagues.
Very true.
First base position is not a prospect position in minor league baseball. Very rarely.
Right.
Unless you just happen to draft one very high. Also coming up later on, Sean had the chance to talk to Mishawaka Athletic Director Dean Huppert about the vacancy in the head football coaching office. So what is he looking for? You got answers, and we'll play that back in a little bit.
Yes, indeedy. We will all hear it together.
That's exactly right. So we will do that coming up. But right now we'll focus on Irish basketball at BC. Saturday at 4 o'clock here on WSBT Radio, Mike Bray, the head coach of the Fighting Irish, met the media 3 hours ago and offered an injury update on freshman DJ Harvey, who has been out since January 16th with a bone bruise to the left knee, and of course, Bonzi Colson, who has been out for a long, long time, early in the ACC season. The boot is off, so he's making progress. So here was Mike Bray's update.
Got DJ Harvey back in practice today and tomorrow, and you know, we're trending the right way. I think there's a good chance we can get him back on the floor and help our depth on Saturday. You know, Bonzi's walking in a shoe now out of the boot after the x-ray yesterday. And, you know, he can shoot a little bit, maybe some light jogging next week. So that's kind of the state of the union with those guys.
What does Harvey's return give you?
Well, he was, you know, just another... Gives you flexibility because, you know, he's another perimeter guy. When he was playing, we were starting him as like the stretch four, you know, so he can play that spot too. He rebounds for us. He's got the ability to score. He's another offensive weapon who physically can rebound for us. So hoping we can get him in some shape to help us on Saturday.
If he's good to go, would you start him or would you?
No, we wouldn't start him. No, because he's been out too much. You know, we'd bring him off the bench. There's no question.
And then as a freshman who hasn't played in a while.
Yeah.
What can you expect even if he's ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he can sit there and get you 12-7 like he's capable of doing, and he's done a couple times. But, you know, just to have another body out there and a guy who can drive it, has ability to make a shot. Again, we loved his rebounding. Again, there'll be some break-in period. Hopefully we can help with some of that today going hard and tomorrow going hard.
Bonzi put out a picture of running on that zero gravity swim. How much conditioning can he do right now?
You know, he can't do anything, you know, just with his own body weight. It's all that stuff and the bike. And he's been very religious. Tony Rylinski has had him on a program, you know, even when he had the boot on, he was doing stuff. But, of course, running after you haven't run in 8 weeks is a lot different. So, again, as excited as he wants to be to come back and help us, we will be really cautious and sit down and talk about it before we really cut him loose because, you know, that there's been no basketball movement for a while, so we've got to be careful.
Are you trying to control his enthusiasm a little bit?
I haven't even talked to him because I love it. I think it's good, and he needs it. It's good for his frame of mind to just keep saying, I'm coming back, I'll be back. I think middle of next week we got to have a real talk and kind of talk to the doctors, look where he's at, see how he's feeling after he jogs on it a little bit.
So that was Mike Bray earlier today passing on the news that DJ Harvey practicing today and tomorrow, if all goes well, returns to the Irish bench, will be active for the Boston College game, and Bonzi Colson continues to make progress. The boot is gone. We watched him shoot after Mike Bray's media session, and he's actually been shooting pretty much throughout this entire process, even with the boot on. So he is inching closer and closer to a return. Another good x-ray, and who knows? We might see good old number 35 back sooner rather than later.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
still...
But it's a starting point. They're getting closer. And so, I mean, a little bit of good news, but it's still good news. I think that getting Harvey back this weekend is going to be good as well because they just kind of continue to get some of these guys back And there are only three guys, Gibbs, Gebben, and Pfluger, who have started all 26 games this season. Otherwise, there have been so many different combinations out there, not just with the starting lineup, but with everything else as well. And when you've got a guy like Harvey, who, I mean, he's been in double figures four times this year, so he has that capability, and the more chances he gets, and especially you're going on the road now, and then when Bonzi and Farrell were both hurt, he had a couple games where he had 9 and 8 rebounds, so he can do some different things, and he's probably not going to play a ton of minutes, but quality depth is what they need, especially if you have some guys who get cold like we saw the other night. You can get somebody in there and see what they can do.
So how much can Harvey be involved in the offense? Again, as Sean was talking about the time off, well, here's what Harvey has been doing recently, according to Mike Bray.
You know, he's been doing shooting. He's been in our shooting drills and doing the conditioning like Bonzi on that treadmill and doing a lot with Tony on the bike. Tuesday, we went some 3-on-3 full court with him and a couple of the other guys and two of the walk-ons. And I thought his conditioning was okay. He needs to get better. Yesterday was an off day, so he had to do it on his own. I know he got in on the treadmill. But these 2 days are really important to kind of see where he is physically, where we go. We need a good day of getting up and down here 5-on-5 and see how he feels and get back playing with the main guys, you know, a little bit.
So probably you want to get the best of DJ Harvey in a 10-12 minute cycle,
right,
in that game. Get what you can out of him.
But then again, didn't we think that Matt Farrell was going to play like 15 to 18 minutes his first time out, and then what did it end up being, like 32 or something?
Right.
Like that? So, Matt Farrell's Matt Farrell and Harvey is Harvey, sure. But still, you just never know the way the game is going to kind of work out.
We also found out that John Mooney will be in the starting lineup against Boston College. So Mooney, after that 6-for-6 three-point effort against Carolina, in the starting lineup for the Fighting Irish. And Mike Bray was asked this afternoon, is this a must-win? His team is 5-8 in the ACC. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I mean, I think everything, we're in a territory now where we're going to have to start picking off a couple and get closer to 500 in the league if we're going to have any shot at getting a bid. And I talked to him about that. I said, we have another Saturday-Monday turnaround. We've been 0-2 and 1-1. You know, maybe we can go 2-0 on this one. Maybe we're ready to do it because, we're going to have to start doing some things to actually be realistically in the discussion.
We have some more audio to play on tomorrow's program, but when talking about NCAA tournament chances, Mike has pointed to 9-9 as the number. He tweaked it to 8-10 today.
Oh, really? Interesting. I've got a rapid-fire question kind of revolving around that. Not necessarily those numbers, but the NCAA tournament that'll start us off.
In a conversation off to the side before the media session, Tom Noy from the Tribune made a great point. The Irish, I hope I don't screw up this stat. He'll text me and yell at me for getting it wrong. But I want to say against winning teams in the ACC, the Irish are 1-8.
That sounds right.
See, that's not going to help you at 9-9 or 8-10.
NC State is their only win against an ACC opponent, a team that has a winning record in conference play. So
there's 9-9, and then there's 9-9. Yeah. And that's not the 9-9 being 1-8. That's
right.
Not going to help you. But again, the bubble stinks every year. There are bad teams on the bubble. So if you can put together a reasonable resume without Bonzi Colson, and if your resume is close to a team that's been in full health the whole year and the resumes are similar, you go with Notre Dame.
Especially,
that's what I think, anyway.
If you get Bonzi back,
yes,
at that
and he
point.
Plays well.
I think that has to factor in there. We've seen it in other circumstances where the committee has looked at injuries, and I think that has to be a big factor.
That's right. All right, so Irish and BC, Saturday at 4 here on WSBT Radio. And BC at home has beaten Duke, Miami, Georgia Tech, and Florida State. And they walloped a bad Pittsburgh team on the road last night. Not going to be easy in Chestnut Hill.
We saw how Robinson could score, and we saw how they could score just a little bit more than a week ago here at Purcell Pavilion.
46-burger. Incredible. All right, we're going to take a 2-minute timeout. Rapid Fire is next. And in about 14 minutes, Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs, and we'll talk Cub prospects here on WSBT. Abby, thank you very much. 6:19 at WSBT. Chicago Cubs prospect talk coming up in about 11 minutes. We'll learn about the Mishawaka football head coaching vacancy from Dean Huppert at the end of this hour. Mike Bray Radio Show at 7 o'clock right now. Rapid fire.
As promised, we'll start with a question regarding Notre Dame basketball. So as of today, Notre Dame is not on ESPN Bracketology's NCAA tournament bubble. They're not on the bubble right now. And they're also not included in either they've got two groups, the first four out and then the next four out. And they're not included in either one of those groups right now either. So
they're at least nine teams away from being in the tournament.
Right.
At least.
So scale of 1 to 10, what chances do you give them to at least be in that conversation going into the ACC tournament?
Going into the ACC tournament.
Correct.
Being at least in the conversation.
Of those next four out, first four out, kind of around the bubble right there.
Can you tell me, are they going to beat Boston College? Because that would change my answer, because they're going to beat Wake Forest.
I mean, if they don't, then it's they're pretty much toast, right?
That would be a crushing loss.
Yeah.
You would have to go deep into the ACC tournament. So
if not win the whole thing.
I'll say six right now. They beat BC. I'll go to seven. They lose to BC. I probably go down to three, because they're going to beat Wake Forest. They're going to beat Pittsburgh. You'd have to imagine they're going to lose at Virginia. It's going to be tough to score against the Cavaliers. Oof. So I'll go with six right now.
Yeah, and here's the first four out. St. Bonaventure, and this is per Joe Lenardi and their latest bracketology. St. Bonaventure, Nebraska, Syracuse, and Baylor. So Notre Dame's got a 67 RPI right now. It's worse than all four of those teams. Their 37 strength of schedule is better than St. Bonaventure's 115 or Nebraska's 117. So they've got a better strength of schedule there. But then Syracuse has a 34 and Baylor is 26. Of course, Notre Dame has a win at Syracuse, but still, just all these. Then the next four, you've got Boise State, Temple, Utah, and Western Kentucky. So I would think that they can at least crack that if, the big if still, they do what we think that they can do and take four out of five. It's still a pretty big task. But the things that hurt them, of course, are their current record, and then what we were talking about earlier, NC State is the only ACC team they've beaten with a winning record in conference play. They're 7-6, and then you've got, of the remaining five games, Miami's 7-6, Virginia's 13-1. So obviously, you win one or both of those, and you're looking really good. But the other three teams, Pitt, Wake Forest, and BC, are a combined 9-32. So those wins, they're wins, which you've got to have, but they're definitely not going to bolster your resume at all.
Ask Nebraska about not playing anybody.
Ugh.
A lot of wins in the Big Ten, but all the wins are against mediocre or average teams.
Yeah. So, long story short, if they win four of those last five, I would give them an eight to be in that conversation. But again, we're still talking about they're probably going to have to do some work in the ACC tournament. But I still keep coming back to the fact that if they're at full strength, including Bonzi Colson there at the end, and they're winning some games, I think that that could really play. That they're at least going to make the committee take a long look at them. Here's who they are now that they're full strength, if they can get Bonzi back, and I think, as you said before, and he's playing well. So, okay, got an audio question for you now. On the Rich Eisen Show earlier today on WSBT, Rich asked the NFL Network's Mike Mayock who he thinks is the number one overall player in this year's draft, and here's what Mayock had to say.
Yeah, it would either be Saquon Barkley or Quentin Nelson.
A guard? Huh? Really? Why?
Because you're asking me the best player in the draft.
Yes, sir.
And
right.
He's 300. Remember Zach Martin?
Of course.
Who same came school out of Notre Dame and became an all-pro first year. This kid is 330 pounds, where Zach was about 310. His feet aren't quite as good, but they're close. And he plays with a nasty demeanor. He hasn't been hurt. I think he's a day one all-pro guard. And it doesn't mean he's going to go in the top 10. And the last two, I think, Rich, the last two top 10 guards were the same year. It was Chance Wormack and the kid Cooper from North Carolina, Jonathan Cooper. And neither of them has had a type of career people thought they would. So there's a little bit of reticence about a guard in general, and especially with recent history. But I believe this kid's flat out unbelievable football player.
Huh.
So just some of your thoughts, especially considering your Broncos are sitting there picking at number 5 in the draft. Your thoughts when you hear some of that.
If they sign a quarterback, I believe their best choice would be Quentin Nelson at number 5. And I do not like taking guards in the first round, but this is not your normal guard. I had the great pleasure of watching every game of his Notre Dame career. He is a lock to be an All-Pro. That's all I'm going to say. Done.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, as good as Nelson is, and as you said, we got to see him every week. You never hear about a team being a guard away from taking that next step and being complete. It's a big reason why no guards have been taken up at the top of the draft in like 40-some years. I can't see him getting out of the top 10, though. Can you?
Just because of the guard position not being a premium spot, I that's the only reason I could see it happening. But if you want to take care of the interior of your offensive line, he takes care of that. That's the guy.
You instantly become a better running team. Yeah. He's going to pass protect. We've seen all the great things that he can do. Are you sold on Saquon Barkley up there at the top of the... Yes. Are you? See, yeah. I think he's about 20 pounds bigger than Reggie Bush, but I just still, I can't help but comparing him a little bit to that. Reggie went number 2 overall. He just seems like he's more of a play in space than pounded hard between the tackles kind of guy. And I wonder about that high in the draft with the running back, because the running back high in the draft has kind of become a resurgence itself over these last few years.
Advantage Barkley, he did not date a Kardashian.
Boom! Can't argue with that at all.
And did not accept improper benefits, at least as far as we know.
That's right. Can't argue with that.
Washers and dryers. And
Major League Baseball currently has a luxury tax for teams that exceed the salary limit.
Mm-hmm.
Would you buy or sell a tank tax for teams that don't either win a minimum number of games maybe in consecutive years or don't exceed a payroll bottom?
100% yes, because we need to actually sit down and do this, because more than any other year I can remember, there are a pack of teams that are all in.
Right.
There's only a couple of teams in the middle, and there's a bunch of teams absolutely tanking or just waiting for a couple of years down the road. Absolutely, there needs to be some sort of tax. In fact, if you don't win a certain number of games, I think you should be taxed for something.
Right.
Because the old saying is, you win 54, you lose 54. It's what you do with the other 54. Well, if you don't win 60, tax. Because you're quitting. You're tanking. It's been very effective for the Cubs and the Astros, but too many teams are now doing it, and the competitive nature of baseball is being affected.
Yeah, and it's happening across sports for that matter, but only 12 of 30 teams finished above 500 in Major League Baseball last year. So I think if you had something like this in effect right now, a tank tax, then you wouldn't have all these free agents, more than 90 free agents still sitting out there
absolutely
unsigned. Right now, I think this is playing into it because of what you said. Too many teams are trying to tank and build for the future. And I get that teams, maybe it's, on the one hand, I think it's good that they have the self-realization that, okay, we're not one guy away. But at the same time, you're selling tickets to fans. You're trying to get them out there and pay attention to your product. I just don't think that you can go 2, 3, 4 years in a row and do this to your fan base and expect that they're going to care about it.
It is no fun being a fan of a tank team when you've got 162 games to sit through.
That's right.
It's not fair for the high prices you have to pay to go to one of those games.
Nope, that's exactly right.
That's going to do it for Rapid Fire today. More tomorrow. We'll talk Cubs prospects with Tom Uziak next. The Sports Beat continues on WSBT. Before we talk some baseball, just want to mention this. Food for thought. You recall over the summer, the FBI investigating basketball corruption, shoe companies. Rick Pitino lost his job.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Thamel from Yahoo Sports just put this on Twitter. And there's a story that we obviously have not had a chance to read being on the air, but it just reads as follows. Sources tell Yahoo Sports that the depth of material in discovery and the basketball corruption cases will alter the sport of college basketball. Hall of Fame coaches, lottery picks, and top programs are all exposed to significant sanctions. And the headline reads, College Hoops Corruption Case Poised to Take Down Hall of Fame Coaches.
Wow.
Hmm. Can't wait to read that when
no
we
kidding.
Get off the air. Hmm. Could be some blue bloods.
I'm thinking you're probably right.
I think we all are thinking one guy down in Lexington right now.
I mean, it's already got one big guy. Yeah, that's Lexington would be another one in Kentucky.
Wonder if there's anyone down there in the Carolina Triangle concerned.
Man.
Not accusing, I'm just asking. I wonder if there's anybody down there in the old triangle shaking a little bit right now.
Very good question.
Because how many Hall of Fame coaches are active right now?
There's a reason that the FBI didn't let the NCAA in on any of this stuff.
I wonder.
Until they started making announcements and issuing what they were going to issue. Because they didn't want the NCAA trying to protect any of the blue bloods referring to.
We might be talking about this subject tomorrow. Can't wait to read that article that is available right now at Yahoo Sports. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. We're joined by Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den, ChicagoNow.com. He's also now involved with Locked On Cubs. We're going to talk about Chicago Cubs prospects, catcher in first base, and at first look, there doesn't appear to be a lot of prospect depth at these positions, but Tom covers this. Will allow him to agree or disagree. And one thing we can agree on, Anthony Rizzo is the Cubs' first baseman, so we don't have to talk anything about that spot at the major league level. Wilson Contreras, a blooming star behind the plate. But Tom, does the signing of Yu Darvish possibly change who the backup catcher is for the Cubs this year, and does it affect the minor league system?
Good evening, Darren, and I kind of agree with the signing of Yu Darvish affecting that. Prior to the Cubs signing Yu Darvish, they went out and they signed catcher Chris Jimenez, who is a longtime backup in major leagues, and at one time caught 12 games of Yu Darvish's when he was with the Texas Rangers. It seems like everything that I've heard out of the Cubs organization is that this kind of gives him a leg up as far as some of the competition there, but we'll have to see how he does in spring training. I have to believe that from the way the Cubs are in the win now mode and everything like that, all Jimenez has to do is not stink in spring training in order to make the team. And that's going to really affect one of the top prospects that the Cubs have in switch hitting catcher first baseman Victor Caratini.
How do you see this whole thing sort of affecting the major, specific to catcher, the major league roster? Because during the World Series season, they carried three catchers. Could you see that happening this year since they do have Jimenez there?
I mean, it's a possibility. It all depends on how the players are at that point in the season, whether they're wearing down, whether any of them are dealing with any kind of injuries. But when you're talking about Wilson Contreras, who was third on the team in WAR last year, that you're not going to be moving him out of that spot for any time. But when you have somebody like Victor Caratini, who came in and played 31 games at the major league level last year, batted over 250. When he was in the minors, he batted 324 with a 393 on-base percentage. So you're talking a guy that could come out there and really contribute to the team. He also plays first base, too. So there's a chance that with him being switch-hitting and being able to play a couple positions, he can give some people rests down the stretch. So there's a possibility that they can go with three catchers down the stretch, but I'd like to see them keep somebody like Caratini. He's a young player who's got a good future ahead of him.
The great thing about the Cubs right now, they have so many players at the major league level you can pencil in for the next few years as their guy, and that includes the catcher spot with Wilson Contreras. So you don't necessarily need a line of wow catching prospects, although you can move some of those, of course, for other parts. But if there's a time to have a little lull, this might be it. But do you feel like, are there one or two prospects, Tom, that ultimately could move up the chain and provide depth at the position or maybe a backup of the future?
I think that there's a lot of them in the Cubs system at the right time. They all have a little bit of work to do in one way or another. One of them is they're all have come through South Bend at one time or another. One is Ian Rice, who played for the Cubs in the Fall League last year. He was at AA, belted 17 home runs, but only hit 230. He did better when he was in the Fall League. He batted 311 there. He's still got some work to do defensively, but he's one of the people that could be working on a backup role in the major leagues. Another one that came through South Bend who had kind of a breakout year last year was Tyler Alamo. He batted 281 with 12 home runs at Advanced Day Myrtle Beach. He also, too, is one that a catcher that can also play first base and is working on his defensive skills at both positions can get better. And lastly, you've got P.J. Higgins, who came through South Bend, was a converted infielder, is very good defensively, shows great pop times behind the plate, can control running game, but he needs to develop more offensively. They have enough time to develop in the minors with the top end of the minors at the catching and first base position all locked up. So the Cubs can use some of that extra time in order to see whether one of these guys can develop.
Tom, who do you think we'll see at the catcher position and even first base in South Bend to start off the season?
That might be a real mixed bag here, depending upon how they decide to want to play things with their pitching staff. There are going to be a lot of really high-level pitchers coming into South Bend this year. They may go very conservatively and bring in a couple of older players named Tyler Payne and Marcus Mastroboni, 25-year-old guys who are known to be good defensive players. They could go with one of their hottest prospects at the position, Miguel Amaya. He's only 19 years old, but is considered to be the best defensive catching prospect that they have in the entire system. Very soft hands, very good lateral movement. The pitchers like pitching to this guy, but at 19 years old, his bat is a little bit far behind him. Lastly, there's a couple of guys that are known more offensively that could possibly be at South Bend. One was there last year for a short period of time, Michael Cruz. He's a left-handed hitter, but he has a lot of power, slugged 9 home runs in only 60 games last year. Needs to work on his defense, but he can be moved around a little bit. He plays catcher, he plays first base. He can even be spotted in the outfield a little bit. Another a prospect out there could be Gustavo Polanco, 20 years old only. He's a line drive hitting machine. He hasn't batted below 280 in his entire professional career. He only caught 5 games last year, so he's being seen more as a first baseman now, but he's right in between that level where he might be at South Bend or they might send him back to short season at Eugene.
I'd like to hear a little more home run calls from the South Bend radio broadcast. There weren't too many home run calls last year. There weren't too many adioses. All right, so Luis Hidalgo, Tom, is a guy on the rise in the system. Seems like he's got a pretty good bat.
Luis Hidalgo was signed quite a few years ago as a catching prospect. What happened was that they were working him in the outfield, and he suffered a devastating leg injury, almost ended his career. He tried working himself back for a couple years in the Caribbean academies. He was in Venezuela for a couple of years. He was in the Dominican Republic for a year. He finally was able to work himself back last season, and he hit in the Dominican League 353, so they brought him up to the rookie league, and he still ended up hitting 339 for them. He's got a lot of hitting skill. He's got a lot of power to him. It's just he's working himself back from the leg injury, and he's going to be limited probably to just first base. But if he can continue to work himself back, he might be able to see some time in the outfield. DH is also a possibility. If things shake down right, he could also be in South Bend this coming spring, and also bringing a lot of power with him there. So there's a lot of options that are available for South Bend right now. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out this springtime.
Tom, you're writing for a couple of different sources online. Where can people read your work?
You can read me at Cubs Den. That's at ChicagoNow/CubsDen. I am also at LockedOnCubs.com. Just put my first article out on that website on Monday, talking about some of the players that we've already talked here on the program for the past couple weeks. And we'll be bringing out another article next week. May hit a few more of them that we've just talked about.
ChicagoNow.com/Cubs, LockedOnCubs.com. You can read Tom Uziak there, minor league correspondent, covers all things in the Cubs minor league system. He'll be back next Wednesday to break down another position group in the Chicago Cubs organization. Tom, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you then.
Thank you very much, Darren. I'll talk to you and Sean later.
Very good. There you go. Tom Uziak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs. It is now 17 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Mike Bray Radio Show starts in 17 minutes. Sean had the chance to talk to Mishawaka Athletic Director Dean Huppert last night about the head coaching vacancy on the football side. We'll find out what Dean's looking for next as SportsBeat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT. Mike Bray Radio Show coming up in 12 minutes. Here on 96.1 FM WSBT, Martin Gibbon, the scheduled player guest tonight on the Mike Bray Radio Show here on 96.1 FM. WSBT, Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. And earlier this week, Bart Curtis decided to leave Mishawaka. He is the new head football coach of the Warsaw Tigers. So the search is on for a new Mishawaka head football coach.
And I talked to Dean Huppert last night at the Mishawaka Cavemen basketball game. They were playing Wawasee, and they won 41-31. And so Dean and I sat down for a few minutes and talked about what's going to happen now as he goes out and looks for his new football coach. And here's what he had to say.
Dean, of course, some big news here in the last few days. An institution at Mishawaka, Bart Curtis, is heading to Warsaw. It's been a pretty busy first year for you. Already hired a basketball coach earlier this year. Let's just kind of the process. When did you kind of first get word that Bart Curtis might be moving?
Well, Coach gave us an indication that there was something in the works, and he was honest with us throughout the whole process. So we weren't as shocked as a lot of other people, but, of course, this week, when the announcement came out and things started happening in social media, Coach talked to his players, he talked to his coaches, and there's been some tears from a lot of people here, because not only did he mean so much to us as a football coach, but also as an assistant principal. And he's a guy who's been a presence. He means Mishawaka pride, and we're happy for him with this new opportunity, and we're looking forward to see the candidates that we have the opportunity to get, because he's built a foundation and built upon the traditions of the coaches before him, but now there's that foundation and that commitment to excellence that we just strive to have. And when you're thinking of that next coach, boy, it's a huge opportunity, and we can't wait to see how it plays out.
Well, and so then what is the next step for you? Have you been hearing from maybe some people interested yet?
We've already heard from some people. We're going to have internal candidates, and Coach has already tipped us off on some people that he feels, you know what, they're ready for that next step. He says, I'm not going to say this guy or this guy. That wouldn't be fair to anybody. But he said, you know what, we create and look for leaders in a culture of excellence. And so he set people up for success. some of these guys want to be head coaches. We're certainly going to give people in-house a good look because they've been part of this success process. But we're hearing from external candidates as we anticipated, and we're going to open it up to everybody and then see who we have. We'll have a committee, and then we'll interview a set number of people, and at that time we'll limit it down, and then we'll have a conversation and say, hey, who's the best fit for us? And the last thing we want to do is destroy the continuity that we have and shake everything up. There's no need to do that. We have an amazing foundation that's been built here the past 10 years, and now when we start looking at where we want to go from here, how do we maintain that and then take it to the next level?
What are some of the main things that you're looking for in your next head coach?
Well, when you look at who we've had, first of all, are they good with the community? Are they going to do community service? Because we think that really plays into how you perform on the football field. If you're a good kid, if you're a good student, and you're going to help out the community is going to support you. And also a presence who the coaches gravitate towards and the kids gravitate towards. We're looking for a leader, somebody to lead this program, and they can look across the field, and some of our opponents are going to go, okay, they mean business. And Mishawaka, they are taking it to the next level, and Bart left them in great position.
The option, the triple option offense has been a big part of this Mishawaka tradition. How important is that in your next head coach?
I'm not going to ask any coach what offense they're going to run. I'm not going to say, how do you do that? We can look at numbers and say, can you score? I'm going to be in the end zone when our team's coming that way and hoping they come down to me and watch the celebration. But I'm not going to teach somebody or tell somebody how to coach. We're going to look for leaders. We're going to look for people who can coach kids and also who can bring those coaches together and lead. And the football coaches who are reaching out to us, the guys who we have in-house, they know football. They understand the game. And people in Mishawaka, whether we're running the ball every time, whether we're throwing the ball every other time, they're going to support and they're really going to gravitate to whoever we have.
Do you have a timeline for when you'd like to get this done?
You know, Dr. Dean Spiker, he told me, he said, you know, I hired a Hall of Fame coach one time, and I looked at him and smiled, and of course he was talking about Chris Giesman. He said, the timeline that we're going to have, it's not before spring break, it's not by the middle of March. He said, it's when it's right. If we do it in 2 weeks, if we do it in a month, I would anticipate we're going to take our time, we're going to find the right fit, we're going to go through the process, let it play out, and then when the time's right, we'll announce who that next coach is.
All right. Thank you, Dean, and best of luck to you.
Hey, thank you.
Sean with Dean Hufford last night, athletic director at Mishawaka High School. I will say this, if the triple option goes away at Mishawaka High School, Tylenol sales will go down in this county because broadcasters will not have to take all those pills before the game because you never know where the darn ball is.
It will be different. That's for sure. I'll tell you, when I was sitting there listening to some of his answers, I thought Dean was going in one direction a couple of times, and then he kind of went in a different direction. So I guess we'll all see how this process shakes out together.
I would have to believe this is a job that a lot of people would want.
I would think so, too.
This is a program in very, very good shape right now and has a solid place in this area. And if they stay in the lower classes like they had the last couple of years, you've got a chance to do some things.
Yep.
Art Curtis goes to 6A in Warsaw, and that road goes through Penn to get to the state championship game. So that's always a tough road, but we'll see what happens with Mishawaka football as they are heading toward a new direction with a new head football coach.
Yep.
It looks like they've done an awfully good job in hiring a basketball coach. The pregame workout, the coach Winsky puts his team through.
It
I was
a workout.
Stunned last week when I saw that firsthand.
That's when you watch him and you said watch it firsthand, and he is hands on down there putting them through their drills and a lot of specific drills and working on a lot of fundamentals right up until tip off. So it's good to see it. It's, you know, as I think I kind of edited it out, but Dean Hubbard hasn't been on the job really that long, and he is already hired the basketball coach, the two premier coaching positions typically, basketball coach and football coach in high school, and he's got to hire both of them in his first calendar year.
Mishawaka football once again this fall on 96.1 FM, WSBT with Mr. Stiers, and the basketball season rolls on. Your next game is?
Tomorrow night, Mishawaka's hosting John Glenn in an NIC matchup.
Very good.
Glenn's having a nice year, and so it'll be should be a good matchup tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night here on WSBT, Mike Bray Radio Show in 4 minutes on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Tonight's Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Once again, Sean will have Mishawaka Caveman basketball tomorrow night at 7:30 here on WSBT Radio as the Cavemen take on John Glenn in NIC action. I'll be at the Compton Family Ice Arena. It is game one of a home-and-home series. Top-ranked Notre Dame taking on number 18 Michigan. And the Irish will host Michigan tomorrow night at 7:35. You can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Sunday's game at wonderful Yost Ice Arena in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mike Bray Radio Show is seconds away on 96.1 FM, WSBT South Bend.